I'm Kathy Poole, and I'm a senior water resource control engineer and working for Scott Bergson in the enforcement program. And I'm going to give you an update on the quarterly report and go over the highlights. That's page 10-7 in your binder. So we have less violations than last quarter. We have one priority one violation, which is the city of Barstow, and we're continuing to work on a plan for cleanup of basically nitrates and groundwater. Priority two violations were predominantly wastewater treatment plant violations, and most of them have staff enforcement. I want to thank staff for following up on those. And then we have some priority three, which are mostly late reports. Then if you turn to the enforcement pending enforcement table, which is 10-8, the top two, which are MMP violations, well, one is MMP and the other is unauthorized discharge to the lake. Both of those have offered to settle and pay their fines. California Department of Fish and Wildlife for Fish Springs Hatchery will pay $9,000 for MMP violations, and Aramark, the top of Queensville, will pay $4,683 for their unauthorized discharge. Some other highlights on this table, the marinas, we've identified some MMP effluent limit violations, and we plan to bring those to the board in November. And then Dutch Dairy, we met with Dutch Dairy last week, and they have agreed to supply replacement water to the two houses that the nitrates were exceeding the MCL. And so that's going to happen in the next couple weeks.
Are you going to mention the Tahoe Donner one, since I'm from Truckee? I'm curious what they did.
I'm sorry, if I said Tahoe Donner, I meant Tahoe Queen.
No, you have it. It's the very bottom one.
Okay. Oh, they had.
I don't know if you're going to get to it.
The violation is installation of a sign in the floodplain, and so it's restricting the. That's prohibited in the basin plan.
So I put in a sign.
Yes.
Oh,
so
okay.
It's on our list. Okay.
It's pretty slow, you know.
I think it was basically repeated offenses, and this is the final problem. Exactly. A couple things on the unauthorized discharge report that I know Patty did go over, but I'm going to add some information. So it's the base page 3-22, if you want to go to it. The first is the spill or the sheen that was identified in the Tahoe Keys Marina. I wanted to thank the TKPOA for taking such quick action. They had already contracted with Clean Harbors before we even got out there, and we went as soon as we got the Cal OES report. So just to see what was going on and see if there's anything that we needed to do immediately. And also, City of South Lake Tahoe was out there, El Dorado County, Environmental Health, and California Department of Fish and Wildlife. So everyone was out there doing what their agency mandates. And so it's been cleaned up as, you know, the area that was identified, and we're still continuing to investigate. We took samples of the sheen, and our sample results were 5 parts per million TPH, which exceeds the effluent limit on the marina permits. And so we haven't identified where that's exactly coming from. And there was also a 0.5 part per million of diesel. And that was just of the water in that cove, you know, the sheen area. The sheen was all over the place. So we're still trying to identify where this could have been coming from, because Clean Harbors estimated that they got 30 gallons of oil, and that is not coming from the oil filter, which is the only you know, person or, you know, discharge that we could identify specifically, other than some spills at the marina and just sailboat discharge from the bilge, which is prohibited but it's apparently occurring. So we're working on that. We maybe we'll give an update on that next time. The other spill that was on our report was the Bishop Paiute tribe, the raw sewage. And, you know, they're not regulated by us, but they discharge to the creek. And they work closely with the county. The county sent out a press release on the different, on the E. coli upstream and downstream. The day of the spill was exceeding, downstream was exceeding the upstream. And then one day after the spill, it was pretty close to normal, or as the county put it, back to summertime levels. So that's that. And then just one thing that's come up since this came out was a 30,000-gallon spill on Tuesday from the city of Victorville of raw sewage that apparently was vandalism. So we'll be doing some more investigation. You know, they are on our list of community enforcement cases, so that will get added to that action. That's all I have. Do you have any questions?
Any questions?
Okay, so I want to introduce Eric Taxler, also the enforcement staff, and he's going to be giving you an update on the Squaw Valley project.
We don't know Eric Taxler.
No.
Thank you.
Well, good morning, Dr. Horn, members of the board. I'm Eric Taxler, Water Resource Control Engineer in your Lake Tahoe office. I'm actually pleased to be here today because I get to explain or share a story that I think is a fun story to share, and it helps to explain what I find to be fun and fulfilling working in an enforcement unit. It's a story of Squaw Valley, and it's a story of how we were able to use progressive enforcement to effectuate change, to not only bring a facility back into compliance, but to, and this is the fun part, where the facility actually embraces environmental concepts and becomes a steward within their watershed. So in this presentation, I'm going to attempt to condense 15 years of history into a 5-minute presentation, just to give us a background of how we got to where we are today. And then I'm going to turn it over to the folks at Squaw Valley to explain and to highlight a lot of their achievements. So, dating back to 1994 or earlier, we had several issues of non-compliance. They basically stemmed from four main sites. There was wetland impacts from the Gold Coast pond site. We had sedimentation erosion from the construction of the Umatilla project. There were channel stability issues, floodplain impacts, wetland impacts associated with the construction of the Headwall Quintus 2 project. And there was erosion issues related to the 248-inch culverts in the upper reaches of the South Fork of Squaw Creek. We addressed these issues by issuing several cleanup and abatement orders. The first was issued in 1994. To address the Gold Coast Pond wetland impacts. In 1999, we issued a second neighborhood abatement order for the impacts associated with the Funatel project. And in 2001, we issued a cleanup and abatement order requiring Squaw Valley to develop a water quality improvement plan and to implement that plan. However, based on noncompliance with those cleanup and abatement orders, we ended up issuing an administrative civil liability complaint. Squaw Valley Sea Corp, in turn, filed a suit against the Water Board and particular staff, and eventually the matter was referred to the Attorney General's office for their judgment. That resulted in the development of the dreaded consent agreement back in August of 2005. So working through that consent agreement, it required that Squaw Valley implement the water quality improvement plan and to implement specific projects that were identified in the cleanup and invasion orders. And these are the projects that were developed by Squaw Valley and completed by Squaw Valley. But more importantly, the consent agreement required Water Board staff and Squaw Valley staff to meet and confer on a regular basis to ensure that these projects are being developed in a timely manner. And it was through that meet and confer process that Water Board staff and Squaw Valley staff reestablished our working relationship. And that resulted in the successful completion of the consent agreement in 2010. And this is where the story gets to be fun. So, since that time, and this is a photo from Katrina Smolin from the environmental consultant with Squaw Valley, but since that time, Squaw Valley has embraced the environmental improvements that they have made, and they have embraced environmental concepts, and they have become an environmental steward in the watershed. Katrina, I'm going to turn this presentation over now to Katrina Smolin. She is with Hydro Restoration, Squaw Valley's environmental consultant, and she's going to discuss the institutional changes that have been made within Squaw Valley Resort Corporation and what those institutional changes have been to help them become an environmental steward in their watershed.
Hello. Good morning. Madam Chairwoman Horn, members of the board, Lahontan staff, thank you all for enabling this opportunity for us to present a true success story of a collaborative effort between Lahontan staff and Squaw Valley Resort. I am a third-party consultant, professional hydrologist, regulatory compliance specialist. I was brought in 2004 following the consent agreement to provide project management and regulatory compliance oversight and to assist in interagency mediation. So, Squaw Valley Resort has moved from enforcement actions to environmental stewardship, and since pictures are worth a thousand words, let's start by reviewing some of the closeouts on the consent agreement. As you can see, this steep vegetative slope was an excavator there, excavator here, loading a rock truck, removing talus from the slope on an extremely steep, rocky slope. Very difficult to revegetate. Very little hydrology to support the vegetation. Very little organic substrate to create root depth. But as you can see, in 10 years' time, vegetative success criteria was met and exceeded. Lower Summer Road project was the removal of fill material adjacent to the stream environment zone. We used a very innovative technology of ground-penetrating radar to examine the water table and the bedrock conditions to make sure they were suitable to put in hydrophytic habitat, and provided this wetland creation project that I helped design and oversee. And as you can see, within 3 years, we had extremely great success with vegetation. The Headwall Lower Terminal was another project that Mr. Faxer has mentioned. And in this project, there was an existing road that came through Headwall that was decommissioned. We de-ripped that road, reseeded, revegetated that road, and ultimately decommissioned it rather than just abandoning it. Fill material was pushed up against the stream during the 1997 flood event to help on road protection. So that fill was removed and a wetland recreated, restored, enhancing the wetland area. In areas outside this photo, on the other side of the lower terminal, we replaced culvert with a free span bridge, revegetated the area, improved the stream environment zone, set the slopes back, and stabilized all bank conditions. This project also met success criteria, and you can see the 10-year difference. So we're really looking at the past decade of work and where we've come and where we are today. Gold Coast Wetlands. This was prior to, this is at the beginning of restoration. We have wetland pod A, A1, A2, A3, and downstream C1, C2, C3, and another area called Lost Lakes. We've done an extensive amount of native seed collection throughout the mountain through with the Environmental Improvement Program to stockpile our native seed bank and help regenerate growth in these wetland pods, engineered pods that are downstream of Gold Coast Pond to help water filtration and water quality. This area has greatly expanded aquatic and terrestrial habitat. KSL, the new owners of Squaw Valley, have been extremely supportive of this iterative adaptive management structure. I work closely with the Lahontan staff, and I'd really like to highlight that through these meet and confer sessions annually, we've developed a relationship that's truly transparent, communicative, collaborative. We've improved the efficiencies, and it's really through the members of the Lahontan staff being able to call us up at any time, say, I've heard this situation, or for us to be able to call staff members, and having this open door policy where we can communicate our needs, the effectiveness of the treatments, and what modifications we need. And that's been a truly amazing process, because we assess the projects, plan, and prioritize what needs to happen, and implement the projects, continue to monitor them for 3 to 5 years at every site for 70% revegetation success criteria, and report back to Lahontan what has happened. And we've typically conducted an annual 8-hour site inspection of our 4,000 acres of terrain. This is in addition to the TMDL requirements that are this parallel process of benthone, macro, and vertebrate sampling on a biannual basis that's conducted by Placer County on behalf of the 4 major landowners within the valley. From 2005 to 2015, there has been 100% water quality compliance. As I say to the staff on site at Squaw, not on my watch. So we avoid and minimize all impacts to the mountain and to the stream environment zones. No new roads have been created. In fact, many roads are abandoned or not used at all if possible. We have an expression, pine needles are a go, witches are a no, pine needles are a go. If you see an area that's pine needled, it's been mulched, it's been seeded, it's been revegetated and enhanced, please keep off. If you see a wood chip area, we put those wood chips down to provide for annual maintenance and for heavy machinery to be able to get in and provide lift support and safety measures. So a lot of the, in my time, I've helped oversee 5 new lift installations, 3 lift removals, 2 teleport installations. Through a best management practice, I work consistently with Squaw staff and Lahontan staff so that we can educate, communicate, train, and provide the best BMPs available on the site. We use helicopter access for all removal of lifts and installation of lifts where there are no roads, making it a truly amazing process and logistically smooth process to make sure that the BMPs are there, those sites are watered down, we have fugitive dust control, and that we're really mitigating the effects of construction by, for example, in a Siberia lift with 11 towers, I believe 7 of them were just stabilized, and there's only five new towers along the lift construction line to be replaced. Develop stormwater plans. I oversee construction by conducting a 3-hour daily site inspection of the mountain. And as I said, we use native plant restoration from a native seed bank or also local seed companies. We have some case studies, and I'd like to say, going back, following the consent agreement, that was approximately $2 million in costs for those restoration projects. And about $300,000 is spent annually on best management practices. And sometimes things happen and natural events occur. So Shirley Canyon became a case study when we had a significant thunder bumper A significant rainstorm event produced several inches of rain. It was a very isolated. We had tremendous amount of rain in the Shirley Granite Chief watershed and almost none on the other side of the mountain. So it was an isolated event. We had muddy creeks, and we went out and we did an in-depth site inspection to try to assess what the causal factors of erosion were. Ultimately, we found that a culvert had been blocked by debris. The stream jumped the channel, was captured by the roadside ditch, and blew out the roadside hairpin turn, as you can see in the lower right photo, and caused a deep rill down the slope and face of the ski run, which you can see on the lower left photo. We voluntarily worked with Lahontan staff to conduct a drainage assessment, looking at the entire watershed, recalculating the appropriate sizing of all culverts in the watershed along the maintenance road, and found that there was a need to upsize three of the culverts, which has been done. In addition, filling the rills, so we had an upland restoration project to reestablish the roadside ditch and to properly outslope the roads to reduce this. And so outsloping roads has become an annual maintenance. When the staff finds an area of road that needs work, we work with SQUAW to continually outslope and mitigate and create rolling dips and water bars to effectively reduce the duration of flow on the road and reduce the velocity and concentration of water on the roads. And so while we have not, so slowly the entire mountain is getting redone piece by piece here as annual maintenance needs apply. And here you can see the significant success between a before picture with water draining down on the inside inboard ditch, where an inboard ditch wasn't necessary, to outsloping the roads, causing the water to sheet flow and remulching and stabilizing the upstream slope, or the uphill slope. We also had the opportunity in Shirley Canyon to do a demonstration project. I'm happy to say that we can look at soil biology and understand the soil health. We can understand how that soil biology improves nutrient cycling within the water supply. It improves water storage. It reduces flood problems and erosion. And so by having a demonstration site, we took a site that had very friable soils and poor conditions, and provided a compost tea application. This was a proprietary blend that my company developed to provide Omri Organic certified manure-free compost, mixing it in a 300-gallon compost tea brewer with worm castings, mycorrhizae inoculants, nitrogen-fixing bacteria, and worm castings. We then took that 300 gallons of compost tea, put it into our water trucks, and applied it in a 2,000-gallon water truck. So we did that twice a year for 2 years, and as you can see, the development between the west side of the slope with no treatment and the east side of the slope with treatment, just to get some vegetative success and improve soil biology and regenerate soil criteria health. And I was saying, you know, last year with the celebration of the United Nations International Year of Soils, we had the Governor's Task Force out to look at our healthy soil conditions and what we're doing to promote demonstration projects. And so this takes the existing BMPs that were developed in the basin of deep ripping and composting to the next level. And SQUAW's kind of developed some proprietary blends of mixing their 50% pine mulch mix with their seed stock and biosol products to create compost over most of our regen vegetation sites. And as you saw with headwall, bowl post, lower summer bridge, we use just compost blankets of pine mulch seed mixes, and so this takes that to the next level of more recent research and studies to look at compost tea applications, where we didn't do the same pine mulch, but had great vegetative success. So, just interesting side projects we were able to do and really benefit the watershed. Some other new demonstration techniques that we're using, the carbon farming projects. Carbon sequestration within in the watershed. And so during the timber harvest project on Red Dog, which was to reduce and improve to improve forest health, where the trees were thinned, it really improved the forest health. We were able to tackle removing some old ski lift materials out of the area at the time, but preserving the wood chips on site, letting them dry and age on site in the parking lots, and break down a little bit so that the following year that we could apply them during our construction sites at Siberia Express and provide, again, so that heavy equipment operations can move in an area that we know is not going to meet vegetation success criteria. We know that equipment needs to get in there annually. It's important for safety and for public safety, and we're just not going to establish a vegetation bank, but we want an organic cover. And so the wood chips have become very handy in establishing that. So that's some kind of unique opportunities we've been able to fulfill. Today, and what does Squaw Valley hold in our future? The watershed, Friends of Squaw Creek, has enabled a public-private partnership and a truly unique collaborative experience between the private landowners of Squaw, which own 90% of the watershed, and what our goals are as citizens and stakeholders to improve water quality, aquatic and terrestrial habitat within the watershed. Trout Unlimited is a fiduciary agent, a friend of Squaw Creek, and we have several consultants, and we've been providing technical advisory. We've had a technical advisory group since 2005. In 2008, we developed for the technical advisory group a conceptual restoration plan that extends from the confluence of the North and South Forks to the Meadows End. And we've divided this up into several reaches of the ideal circumstances of what Friends of Squaw Creek would like to see, with rehabilitating relic channels throughout the wetlands and floodplains, improving groundwater surface water interaction, improving nutrient cycling, and reducing sediment loading, and ultimately increasing aquatic and terrestrial habitat. I'm happy to say Squaw has adopted the recommendations of the technical advisory group and purchased a $5 million piece of land to set 3.5 acres into a conservation easement in what the technical advisory calls the Bedload Freedom Zone. And we believe that enhancement and expansion of the wetland areas within downstream of the parking lots and downstream of the constricted areas will allow for flood attenuation and sediment deposition. And it's been a recommendation of Friends of Squaw Creek. Squaw Valley has embraced that and proposed that in their future development plans. That was not required mitigation, but supported by Friends of Squaw Creek. So this is a conceptual design by Balanced Hydrologics to re-meander flows throughout this Bedlam Freedom Zone. Squaw has proposed funding $2 million towards creek restoration in the Trapezoid Channel and Olympic Channel. Downstream, we get past the land of Squaw Valley, but it's still supported by the private ownership. And so I just want to have a few minutes to share with you some of these recommendations by Friends of Squaw Creek. We have the old Olympic parking lot that was filled with 6 feet of sawdust by the Navy Seabees back in the 60s to provide parking for the Olympics. And today we can still see evidence of the trenching and draining of those wetlands through these lateral, very perpendicular drains throughout the meadow. So we'd like to restore those. Some of the areas are not able to be restored and live in the golf course, and others are. And so we're conducting a hydraulic study this summer to look at the feasibility of meandering flows throughout the wetland and ultimately improving water storage and water supply, raising the groundwater table through meadow restoration. We're looking at downstream erosion and bank erosion. That's a lead causal factor of the sediment conditions leading to the Clean Water Act impaired listing for sediment within Squaw Creek and the implementation measures for the TMDL that can be brought by using the relic channel as an alternate rather than the existing channel. So I'd just like to thank you and express to you Squaw Valley's deep commitment to their sustainable slopes program and the recognition that by having sustainable slopes and sediment source control, we improve the watershed as a whole. Thank you.
Any questions?
About how many years left before the say the complete restoration of Squaw Creek, roughly?
The Squaw Creek restoration is just beginning. We have acquired some grant funding this summer from the Tahoe. We are a member and MOU signatory of the Tahoe Sierra IRWM, and DWR has provided some implementation funding to just begin that this year. We're looking at approximately five phases, probably a 10-year period throughout the phases. We believe we'll be able to start and break ground next summer. Perhaps a few smaller treatments this summer, but the large extent will begin next summer.
Mr. Banks? Well, having been very involved in the unhappy period that was referred to earlier, this is really wonderful news to hear. So thank you so much for updating us about what's going on at Squaw Valley. And it's wonderful news. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Anybody else want to speak on this item? Okay, with that, the May meeting of the Lahontan Board is adjourned. Thank you very much for coming.